I'll go back to where we started yesterday with a challenge from Professor Barker and a few notes from Bill Colglazier. That being, we needed to look at procedural values, distributional values, and evidential values. And I'd like to add to that, we've had a lot of discussion about those over the past few days, past sessions, a few additional thoughts before trying to sum this together for us. Next. Now, if you could, three thoughts. The first is that there's never enough time to do it right, but always time to do it over. And apparently the resources. We hear that time and time again through various endeavors that we're in. And inevitably, the more expensive, the more time-constrained it is, the more rush there is to do it and to skip over important aspects. The second is that we must avoid paralysis by analysis. We know that we can study something forever and never make progress that's meaningful to meeting the objectives that we're trying to achieve. The third is we must recognize where we are, how we got there, use our experience to move forward. We cannot change the past, but we must learn from it. And it's in these contexts that I put forward the thoughts that I think try to sum up where we are and where I think we should be going, and hopefully provide some fodder for you to throw darts at, and hopefully to generate some discussion following this. The next slide, please. I think our challenge right now is making the case, so much so that I suggest that the summary document coming out of this should be titled Making the Case. And to do that, we have three important questions that we have to answer if we're going to be successful. Why do we need a complete system for nuclear waste management, including geologic repositories? Why is the proposed approach safe and responsible in light of our current knowledge and our current uncertainties? And finally, why is it in the communities, states, and national interest to host the repository? And I think we must consider the entire set of environmental interfaces, nuclear fuel cycle, risks, and benefits. We've had a lot of talk about the repository or repositories, including WIP, over the past 2 days. But we also have to remember that there are other environmental impacts that come from the nuclear fuel cycle. There are other costs that come with it, but there are also other benefits that come from that as well. So what I'd also like to mention is the importance of other nuclear activities and how they play out. We've heard that some in non-proliferation earlier. We've heard some from the defense activities and how they play out in the overall role of where we're going as a nation. Next slide, please. So I'm going to try to answer some of those questions based on what I've learned over the past few days and over the past few years of being involved in this area. Why do we need a complete system for nuclear waste management, including geologic repositories? Well, we have a benefit of nuclear energy security as part of national energy portfolio that includes conservation, renewables, and reduced reliance on fossil fuels. I don't think that you can view these aspects independently. I think as soon as you try to view them independently, it becomes an either-or scenario, and different aspects fulfill different roles in the role of energy security and energy efficiency and protection of the environment. So much as Sokolov put forward the wedges as to looking at our energy future, we also have to look at where we're going from an environmental risk perspective, from a portfolio management perspective. Environmental protection. There is avoidance of greenhouse gases from nuclear, and we hear that a lot, and certainly an impact on global warming. What we also cannot forget is that we're avoiding other emissions which are perceived and in many cases may be very real harmful. That includes heavy metals such as mercury, arsenic, selenium, etc. from fossil fuel usage. And you hear widely in the arguments these days the issues about coal combustion and coal combustion residues. And recognize from those activities we have a wide array of huge quantities of materials that also have to be managed in an environmentally sustainable and protective manner. It's not just nuclear waste that we're dealing with as part of our energy portfolio, but the waste from all the different energy production mechanisms. Also, responsible management of residues and waste full lifecycle management, apparently today, in my opinion, is exhibiting much, much greater care than any other waste management examples that we see. We're considering multiple generations and millions of, or let's say thousands of years into the future as we look at this. And it was pointed out yesterday, as we look at hazardous waste sites, we have a horizon of perhaps 30 years. And when we look at other activities, we have categorical exclusions independent of the risks or hazards that they may pose. Next part of the aspects that we ought to consider in this is national security. And although Tom Isaacs did not have to go have much time to go into it in more detail, I found a very interesting case that he made of the need for leadership and management of nuclear materials to prevent future proliferation as other nations seek energy security through nuclear energy. That means that we have to have the leadership in managing the materials that come as residuals so that both us are environmentally protected, but also so that it does not become a resource for proliferation for other countries in the future, or that we, or in turn, have some control of our national security that may be impacted as a consequence. I've heard many arguments about the role of non-proliferation and the linkage to nuclear energy. I think nuclear energy is inevitable throughout the world. We are seeing that occurring, and we have to open our eyes that we have to have influence and leadership in the management of the residuals, or they will become troubling in one form or another. And to me, that's a much more compelling argument than proliferation-resistant fuels, which I have still trouble understanding. Next slide, please. Why is the proposed approach safe and responsible in light of our current knowledge and uncertainties? Best technical evaluation based on current knowledge provides multiple redundant protective systems through engineered barriers and natural systems. We heard Bob Stock, we heard several others, Chris Whipples, that we have both belts and suspenders. We have uncertainties with that, but certainly together they provide clarity that we're being as protective as our best analysis allows at this time. A system of continuous learning through ongoing long-term testing and research, if you will, of system components and an integrated system with feedback to system performance evaluation, design and operations, as well as other knowledge, medical, et cetera, as we just heard from Dr. Upton. We want to have a system that allows us to be responsive over time and to recognize the uncertainties that we have and to continuously learn and keep the options open for the future generations and bequeath them in a practical sense both the wealth and the opportunities to impose their own values into the future. We want preemptive monitoring in place and designed to facilitate detection and correction. Both these need to be intrinsic in design principles in response to unforeseen processes or events. I must admit that performance assessment is a wonderful tool. I've seen it used very effectively in nuclear safety and chemical weapon safety analysis. I'm also very sensitive to the fact that the accidents that we did see in the chemical weapons demilitarization area were the events that were not foreseen as part of that analysis. So therefore, we have to plan for the best that we can prepare for, but also plan that there are unforeseen events that we must be able to detect and be responsive to before they become troubling to our society. Next slide, please. Why is the proposed approach safe and responsible in light of our current knowledge and uncertainties? Continuing that argument, retrievability for many generations to come allow review and changes in decisions based on future resource needs, knowledge, and values. Stable and credible institutions are essential to ensure proper management. We have to have those in place. Respected long-term leadership. We heard about the difficulties and the troubling difficulties of having a new office director perhaps every 2 years and having an interim director every 2 years as part of our current four-year political cycle. Stable, highly trained professional staff with education and training programs for sustainability. We've heard about the challenge of recruiting adequate staff, shortcomings in educational investment right now, and the need for, and the long time it takes for people to become familiar with these very complex areas. Secure funding. Who's going to believe anything's put in place if we can't believe that a program has the funding next year? How do we have any confidence if we're siting a facility that it will have the funding to maintain it 20 years from now, much less 100 years from now, over the currently assumed period of stewardship and institutional controls? systems of checks and balances, including independent expert review and community participation. We heard that from Roger and from Michael earlier this morning, how important that they are, so that it provides a sustainable stewardship system where if one aspect has the troubling, comes apart, then it is checked, it is corrected, both from institutional and technical way, and the community, local and regional and national, understands it in a transparent manner so that it becomes credible and confidence remains. Why is it in the community, states, and national interest to host a repository or other nuclear waste management facility? Recognizing we heard the challenges of low-level waste facility that we're facing as a nation right now. Obviously, there are aspects that deal with that initial ore recovery and management of the tailings from that, and potential into the future advanced fuel cycles that will have reprocessing and different nature of waste that we have to deal with. Well, we have to be convinced that we have an appropriate geologic setting, that we have a fair site selection and credible regulatory process. We have to have a convincing safety case and be familiar with nuclear systems and benefits from nuclear energy, both their risks and their benefits from nuclear materials. I can't say that we have all of these things in place right now, but these are what I think is where we need to be going as a society. Next slide, please. Other aspects for why you'd want to host a facility is supporting a national need and environmental stewardship. It is part of our mission to be environmental stewards, regardless of how we discount it and how we view the long-term population that Dr. Russell just spoke about. I think to be fair to future generations, we have to be good stewards, and we have both an individual and collective responsibility that way. Long-term commitment to economic development. Well, this is part of what I think the package needs to be to take a look at this. Then, you know, money is not enough, and money is not only part of it inevitably because there are true costs, but also who believes in the credibility of financial rewards, if you will, because the people that benefit from them are hardly or often not the people that have the burdens. They may not be reliable over time. A good example is what Ward said to us is we had a tax on energy that was put into a fund to support the development of a geologic repository. Well, over political manipulation over time, it is now offsetting our federal deficit and cannot be used for that effect. So I think we need to look a little bit more deeper than financial incentives. I think we need to look at the benefits to the community in terms of high quality infrastructure and educational opportunity that would come along with it, the responsiveness the community needs, and we've heard examples of that in Sweden and elsewhere, and the ongoing research and development engine that it would provide, because we have to recognize that we're into this for the long term. This is not a bury and forget endeavor that we're going into for our generation and the next generation, and beyond that, we'll let those generations decide. We need transparent decisions, state and local involvement in that, and equitable distribution of the benefits from the repository, not just saying that this is one community which is being burdened. Next slide, please. I think there are a number of essential elements that we need to consider. Institutions and processes, they need to be put in place that are stable, credible, and transparent. And that means different from what we have now, what we heard about. I'll talk a little bit about that more. It has to be imbued with technical competence and excellence. The leadership has to be long-term, highly credible, and focused. It cannot be distracted by a million other missions, several other missions of an agency, as happens often. And we have to have stakeholder engagement. It has to happen through multiple levels and multiple methods. Visiting communities alone is not going to do it. Stakeholder surveys alone are not going to do it. And we can't presume that we know where we're going now, as Roger told us. We have to learn in that area as well and be prepared to be responsive and evolve through continuous evaluation and improvement and a commitment to sustained public involvement over the periods that we expect to have these sorts of waste management facilities, or as long as our judgments are the ones that are important until future society values may change that. Next slide. Financial support has to be sufficient, stable, and independent of political manipulation. I've said that before, and I think I need to go further. We have to have continuous learning. That has to be an imbued value throughout the program. both in terms of how we do community involvement, how we do science, how we do engineering, how we do design, how we do institutional management of these things. We need adaptive management that goes hand in hand with continuous learning. And we need science-based analysis. We're not going to change the laws of nature. So safety, risk sciences, materials, geology, contaminant mass transfer, go on and on with the importance of science there. But also, we have to make our science transparent. We have to make it accessible and take upon ourselves as scientists to communicate that scientific learning effectively to the public and to the various constituencies. Legal and regulatory clarity. I think there's a strong misnomer, which didn't necessarily come out as strongly today as I perhaps would have liked, about what criteria is. Criteria, none of us know what it's going to be in the thousands of years forward, and Dr. Upton spoke about advances in medical understanding, and others spoke about uncertainties that we have through the transport and the judgments that we have to make. In reality, it's a reference case based on our best current knowledge and values, and that will evolve in time, and there'll have to be ongoing reevaluation that's consistent as generations move forward. And of course, we need checks and balances. We do not benefit from stalemate or stagnation, which is where frequently we are in this process. Next slide, please. The next site selection process must be responsive to national dialogue and community input, and we have to have that that goes first, have clear pre-established criteria that include adaptive management, and maintain process integrity through stability, independence, and transparency. Sustained commitment to nuclear education. That's imperative that all of us understand nuclear materials, ranging from the medical applications to the industrial applications, the risks, and even background radiation up through nuclear waste management. So that means that we've got to have a long-term commitment at multiple levels, national and community education, primary and secondary education, higher education. We need to target a diverse population. As Professor Higley mentioned, it cannot be all aging, graying, white males. We have a diverse national population that includes blacks, Hispanics, Native Americans, other cultural groups, and we have to have them represented because they are going to be changing and evolving in time and must be part of the mix as we go forward in all aspects of this. Collaborative research and development. There is a partnership that needs to be established between the universities, national laboratories, federal agencies, and industry. And I would offer that that's out of balance right now. It's out of balance in terms of the resources and the involvement. We've heard about the shortcomings of or cutbacks in university investment, but where do you think your next series of professionals are going to come from? And where is the independence going to come from that's essential as part of the credibility that needs to be part of this process? Nuclear, and this is not only in nuclear waste and nuclear engineering, but nuclear waste management and also the broader field, the term coined, I believe, by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, nuclear environmental protection, nuclear engineering and health physics. All these are essential areas. Next slide, please. And I do want to add to that, that all of these areas as part of the educational process have to understand the ethics, risk communication, stakeholder involvement, and all these other essential processes that we spoke to. We cannot have engineers living in a box that cannot communicate or understand the social value judgments that are inherent in the decisions that they make. The importance of ongoing demonstration, development, and research. Coal facilities to demonstrate operational capability of system components and system integration. Hot facilities to ensure consistency with the performance assessments, performance assumptions and assessments, both at the component level and at the system level. At the component level, we can see things in much shorter time scales, and we can see and contest those hypotheses that are needed in it. We saw lots of that embedded in the Swedish program. And what that does is it also demonstrates our commitment to continuous learning and adaptive management because we're taking the measurements that we need. The point that Bob Budnitz made very effectively yesterday during the discussion. It's worthless to just let something sit on the shelf and see if it changes in 100 years if we don't take the measurements that allow us to see the processes and the responses of the system, such as to the thermal pulse. Also, in terms of corrosion, for example, also it shows commitment and is an effective tool for education and communication. The importance of that was spoken very much by Dr. Thierstorff. Next slide, please. Engineered in national and natural systems. Because we don't know what the future holds, we need to rely on passive rather than active protection systems and intrinsic safety. Had a lot of discussion about that. I favor distributed barriers over point barriers, and that comes, I'll explain that a little bit more as we go forward. And I also think that's consistent with reliance on a coupled mixture of geologic and engineered barriers. Provide multiple redundant layers of protection. We're doing that by virtue of the type of criteria that we're setting. We are saying that we need to be much more cautious and be able to make revisions, and we're using our best judgment now that we believe will be protective and the probabilistic analysis to account for uncertainties, and coupling that with other lines of evidence would allow us to do that. We have to design monitoring systems to detect precursors to deviations from expected performance of the system components. If we don't know something is changing other than what we assumed, then how are we going to correct it? How are we going to improve our long-term projections and analysis? And we have to design our system for maintenance or retrieval in the event of significant deviations. And we've talked about that, the retrievability for many generations to come. But also, it's not only a part of the design, but to maintain the retrievability indefinitely until it's demonstrated to be sufficiently consistent with both a prediction or understanding of performance of components and the system, and with acceptable safety margins exist for future performance scenarios, and therefore it must be consistent with the values in the future. None of us in this room today are ever going to make that decision as to whether it should be closed permanently or not. And I believe that it will not even be our children that will ever make that decision. So we have to keep the options open to the change in our technical understanding and to our changes in the value of the material that is placed there, potentially as a future resource, and to changes in the values of society and medical understanding, et cetera, as a whole. Next slide, please. Performance assessment. I believe the performance assessment should be a living model. It's regularly updated based on ongoing research and monitoring focus to reduce uncertainties. And that also becomes an engine for those educational programs for the future and some of the benefits to the host location. Provides for a structured and integrated analysis, which is really essential. It allows us to explore the postulated failure scenarios to look at both the whole evaluations that we've spoken of earlier. Multiple evaluation levels improve understanding. Our system components and how they may fail or not, or how they may respond, the integrated system. And we have to look at assessments that consider both the model uncertainty, the intrinsic uncertainty, such as in geologic material, and the parametric uncertainty. All too often we get biased towards one of those and to neglecting others. And it should have a modular approach to support independent review and testing. To have one humongous integrated code that cannot be parsed out so that other groups can independently evaluate it and work with it leads to a lack of the transparency and credibility that is so essential if we're going to have reliance on these types of assessments, which I think are very important. And it should support other approaches and understanding. In other words, complements the multiple lines of evidence, the issues of natural analogs and other decision approaches that should be made, that are brought together to make the overall safety case for these systems. Next slide, please. Regulatory. I think that we need a new paradigm for nuclear waste classification that's based on the hazard, not the origin of the material. And when I call hazard-based here, because keep in mind, we're talking about the full system, not just what goes into the repository. Classification should consider the specific activity, the activity type, the total inventory, the release potential from the waste form that it's in, the environmental mobility of the constituents. The mobility of cesium is very different than technetium, for example. The toxicity at the individual, constituent, and aggregate levels. And obviously, as you go through the decay life as well, that's part of the individual activity and the types that you have. Existing, but we have this conundrum. How do we get there without upsetting the apple cart of where we are today? I think existing materials and facilities at the time of promulgation of a new system should be given the option of either being grandfathered under existing system or regulated based on the new system, with new materials and facilities making that transition into the requirement of the new system as it evolves. Next slide, please. Our regulatory system has to evaluate the acceptability of estimated risks should be in the context of other natural risks over the time frames considered. We heard about a lot of those that are occurring, or some of them we call man-made, obesity, for example, and other things that we've got to consider in the short term or some of the other longer-term risks that we face. Potential for early detection and corrective intervention, the nature and the magnitude of the uncertainties, and I think a standing independent review board should be required as a consultative review body for criteria, licensing, demonstration, monitoring, research, etc. I think that's a broader scope than what our current TRB has, and it should be looking at the full fuel cycle set of issues, not just a repository issue. Next slide, please. Site selection and implementation. We've heard earlier from Professor Powers and from others that, and even from Warren Spurt, about the need for an independent public organization that needs to be established for site selection and implementation. There are models that should be looked at carefully, and there's ongoing debate about that, perhaps a commission. We see the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as one example of a politically engaged but also highly stable and highly credible organization. Or a public corporation is also being considered as a mechanism also. However we view this, it has to have stability and credibility and be sustainable. The politically appointed members absolutely should include representation from the affected states and provide balance and stability. It should not be subject to the political cycles of 2 years or 4 years. And funding should be provided in a manner that's independent of federal budget cycles and fund rating. I mentioned that earlier, I don't think I need to say it again. And I can't stress enough the importance of the leadership and organizational stability along with high-quality professional staff that's necessary for the establishment of consistency and the credibility of the process as a whole. Next slide, please. Okay, now the sites that selection implementation, well, needs to be geologically appropriate. For the reasons I mentioned earlier, the package should include local and state involvement and oversight, development of community infrastructure, meaningful opportunity for the community and state, and that we've got to get to that balance between the state and the region and the host local host community. And I believe that it's going to be most effective if it is tied to nuclear processes or the nuclear industry in one way or another, and that is an area that's familiar with these materials and also derives some benefit from it. Public involvement and responsiveness will be critical, and adaptation of the Swedish model might be something that we look at going forward. It's something that seems to be successful right now. Next slide, please. Materials and waste forms to be managed. Now, this is something that I don't think we got adequate treatment of, but I mentioned it a little bit, that what's the potential for the material to be a future resource? What's the intrinsic nature of the waste form itself? If we go on to the next slide, we talk about spent nuclear fuel. We've got multiple shelves of barriers with potential for point failure, such as localized corrosion that Dr. Garrick spoke of, which I tend to refer to as localized barriers. We have a potential future resource, potentially under advanced fuel cycles. That's an open national and international debate right now. And I'm sure that will evolve over time, and over time frames probably longer than my lifetime. And we have about a 100-year decay during storage, which reduces the thermal load and shielding requirements for recycling or for disposal. And it primarily results from energy production. In contrast, we have vitrified high-level waste. The constituents of concern are embedded in a corrosion-resistant waste matrix, a band glass matrix, which I tend to refer to as a distributed barrier, waste embedded, as opposed to the shells or the localized barrier. It's unlikely to be a future resource. It's already been processed through one or multiple recovery cycles. It's primarily from the defense mission, currently is the case, and uncertainty with respect to disposition pathway and acceptance criteria hinders restoration of the DOE complex. If we're going to have credibility in managing future nuclear waste as we generate, we have to have credibility that we effectively manage and can dispose of the things that we recreated over the past 50 years as part of our defense mission. To see those two as not being coupled in the public's eye and credibility, I think is wrong. I think we need to be looking at these things in a much more systematic and integrated manner. Next slide, please. So, I think one of the things, recommendations, suggestions, take them as you will. I'm sure we'll throw darts, and this is a draft. But I think we should reestablish the issue of geographic equity, establish multiple geographically distributed consolidated storage locations, not necessarily regional facilities, but they may be differentiated based on the SNF characteristics, and the emphasis should be on dry cask storage from decommissioned facilities as a starting point. Initiate site selection process for a second geological repository, and separate the disposition pathways for vitrified high-level waste, and separate from it, and potentially other defense waste from that for spent nuclear fuel. Because I think the credibility issues and the differences I point out warrant moving forward more rapidly with the vitrified high-level waste than they do necessarily, which will be far more open to public debate, I believe, dealing with spent nuclear fuel, but recognizing also the cost and potential for things going forward. And then because of that, potentially examining with Oryuka for that vitrified high-level waste or another repository, I think makes sense. And proceed in parallel with Yucca licensing. We can't forget about our past. We are where we are today, a huge investment, and also with a case that appears to be a very strong case for moving forward in that direction. Obviously, it's coming forward, and there's been debate about the different pieces of it, but we're also preserving our ability to respond to it in the future and to change, and I think that is really important. Next slide. So explore permitting of WIP, Yucca, or a different repository location for vitrified high-level waste and potentially other defense waste, independent of SNF management, but clearly recognizing that the two are closely together. And I think it's that independent look at it that allowed us to move forward with WIP, with true waste management, which is now very effective, and the community feels very comfortable with it because of the transparency and the fact that it had options to move away from it, and the fact that it has ongoing benefit and pride and understanding of the nuclear processes, and it's coupled with continuous look at what's going on, transparency. Next slide, please. For spent nuclear fuel, establish a reference plan of consolidated storage with timelines for storage prior to either recycling or geologic disposal. The French have done that, I believe, very effectively in saying that they have a base case as a reference case. Use consolidated storage period to pilot and demonstrate performance of recycling processes and repositories. That doesn't mean don't license it all up front, but also recognize we have a lot that we can learn from filling that first drift and looking at the thermal loads on it and how the hydrologic system will behave and how over that time frame as it equalizes what the corrosion properties would be. Having experiments as an ongoing part of this continuous learning process, as was recommended by the One Step at a Time report by the National Academy, I believe has a lot of benefit. Next slide, please. So that's the end of the recommendations I wanted to put out for you, just some thoughts. And what I suggest right now is we take a 10-minute break and come back for discussion.